Let's get to our guest now, Adrian Zirka, CIO and Head of Global Asset Allocation at UBS Global Wealth Management with us in Hong Kong. So we're looking very closely, and we ask this question pretty much daily on Bloomberg, whether or not China is investable. You're saying it looks like a value trap at the moment. Tell us your thoughts here.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Well, I think China looks very cheap, of course, versus its peer on history. But there's a couple of issues that we face, of course. First of all, it's a value trap because COVID makes it so difficult for earnings to recover. It makes it also very difficult to put a tag basically behind the fair value part. So the COVID restrictions with zero policy are probably staying with us. A lot of people are betting basically after the Congress, National Congress, which starts on October 16, that things are improving. But we actually view that the government has really boxed themselves into a corner and will make it very difficult to get out of it. And it probably will be only after the reshuffling of the political establishment, which will only end in March next year. And that's a real drag for the economy. And on top of that, we have this big elephant in the room, which is the housing market. It's so important. It's 50% of household wealth, one third of local government revenues, and it's 25% of GDP. And this is still not fixed. And therefore, it will take longer to unlock some of this value we see.
Yeah, absolutely. Great point, because moving away from COVID zero doesn't fix those problems. When it comes to what we're seeing in the currency market, I mean, we talk so much about seven potentially being a line in the sand. What are you seeing in terms of these very kind of quite aggressive moves by the PBOC to try and stem the yuan weakness?
Yeah, we have seen the triple R cuts by 200 basis points has been cut, injected more liquidity. Of course, it also means that the banks have to hold less FX reserves as the PBOC, and that should basically help to stabilize the CNY. But the main issue is that the US and the West are hiking. The PBOC is in the easing mode, and the seven is a psychological number. It's very important, of course, going into some political events in China, but it's unlikely actually that it will hold. So we actually think it will break. It will break above it. We don't see a huge sort of sell-off in the CNY, but just the fundamentals are weak, and therefore the PBOC will probably be forced to let the CNY depreciate even further. And we would basically hedge the CNY currently in our portfolios.
And if they do allow it to depreciate further, which of course would be rule about the move in the dollar, do you see further cuts to that FX reserve ratio again before the end of the year?
Absolutely. I think there will be more triple R cuts coming through. The PBOC will probably also be reluctant to cut other benchmark rates. Because of that, they will probably try to inject more loans into the system to support the economy. But it really puts the PBOC in a very difficult spot, because we haven't really seen that they are going full after the economy and try to stage this rebound with support measures, because they're so worried about the CNY.
So looking at potential opportunities in China markets, and a Bloomberg Big Take report today has shown that assets in China's ESG funds have doubled since 2021 as we continue to see policies really support renewable power and energy security. Is this a sector that you would be looking at ahead of and, of course, post the Party Congress?
Well, absolutely. So we try to align within China our portfolios really to the policy measures and the strategic important measures that actually China wants to take. So EV cars, renewable energy, these are really key for China, and do think that there's more value actually to extract out of the equity market. Some of these companies really have suffered over the last couple of months. But we actually see that EV sales have now started to rebound despite the macro headwinds. We see more support measures coming through, stimulus coming through in this area. Solar is another important topic. And we actually do think the whole sustainability aspect also makes it interesting from a global perspective to invest into China.
What about when it comes to the tech space? I mean, you mentioned earlier you're cautious on the real estate sector, but we are seeing, I guess, some more focus of reports that President Xi has called for a stronger effort to advance a lot of the key tech players in the country. This is a sector that's been hit hard, as we know, by regulation. Do you stay away or are you selective here?
Very, very selective. I think there's some key strategic important also policy measures there, particularly when it comes to the chip industry. But unfortunately, it's still quite behind the global chip manufacturer out of the US and Taiwan. And it's very difficult to invest. And the whole digital economy, particularly the big names, the heavyweights in the index, the earnings season was actually quite good in the second quarter, but there's still these regulatory headwinds. You're still relatively conservative about the whole gaming industry, particularly in China, because there's still policy measures which are basically holding back the whole industry, and it makes it difficult for companies to achieve a decent earnings growth. One area we start to like a bit more is e-commerce sector. I actually do think that with also the lockdowns, that people still shifting more to e-commerce, and some of these companies have derated quite a lot. So you can start to cherry pick in these areas, but it's definitely you're still far away from broad-based buying into tech at this point.
Okay, let's talk more broadly about the Asia Pacific and when we could see inflation peak here in Asia. Every sort of central bank is on a little bit of a different cycle in terms of the fact that some of the more developing nations are a little bit behind the pack. Where do you see, I guess, inflation peak in Asia? We're obviously going to follow the West, but what more sort of central bank action are you expecting?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. First of all, we of course expect that inflation has peaked in the West and probably continue to decelerate, and maybe more visible decelerate over the next couple of months, particularly in the fourth quarter. And in Asia, we haven't really seen this peak coming through. We are a commodity importer, of course, and commodity is really the key driver of this inflation. But we also haven't seen the very strong numbers like in the West. So it's elevated level, but we are not in the same area. We actually do think Korea and Singapore are really well ahead of the pack. They have hiked quite aggressively, also more in line with the West. When we look at Malaysia, Philippines, or in India, they're probably halfway down. And Indonesia and Thailand, they definitely have a longer way to go. They need to stabilize also their currency. I think it's important also for the balance of payment.
And just a quick final question, yen at 143, when or does the Bank of Japan finally intervene here?
Good question. We are still cautious on the yen, but I would say if you have a bit of a longer term view, we see value there. It's definitely way too cheap, and the BOJ eventually will have to start to hike interest rates. So we're probably not too far away from the low.
All right. Always a pleasure, Adrian. Thank you. Adrian Zirka, CIO and Head of Global Asset Allocation at UBS Global Wealth Management, on the line from Hong Kong for us here.